mounds of dinosaur waste, hoping to find an undigested fern leaf. Robo stopped by erratically, unpredictably. Thanos realized early on that his lordship's major domo and primary weapon did not entirely trust him. Perhaps some of Thanos' enmity had leaked psychically to Robo. Or perhaps he regretted telling Thanos his lordship's secret. Whatever the reason, Thanos sensed that time was running out. He had to act quickly. So he spent as much time as he could in his old quarters with Cha, building the first element of his plan.
"It's a hat,"
Cha said warily, watching as Thanos used medical adhesive to graft two pieces of dented, curved metal. Cha's hand had healed from its break, but he still tended to flex it randomly, as now, expecting pain every time. "How does a hat get us to mutiny?"
"It's not a hat," Thanos told him. "It's a helmet."
Fashioned of medical-grade steel and pieces of finer alloys scavenged from the ramshackle engines, the helmet contained meticulously soldered circuitry within its dome. It had taken Thanos 2 weeks to gather the materials and another week to assemble them. Each day, each hour that passed, he feared discovery and the psychic spike that had exploded Guga's eyes. He also feared the ship splitting in two, and his lordship casually, indiscriminately, deciding to kill off his new engine chief for no sane reason. He had a great many fears, and not many options.
"A helmet, then," Cha said doubtfully. "How does a helmet move along your mysterious plan?"
Thanos sat back and admired his handiwork. He had used tools ancient or broken, and in some cases both, but still managed to cobble together the first piece of the puzzle that would oust his lordship for good.
"I've noticed that Robo has to be close to use his power, within arm's reach."
"Yes, so?"
"That means it's transmitted on a short-distance wavelength. I've calculated how many could be generated by organic brain matter."
He held the helmet aloft. It was blue, with a gold stripe bisecting it. Above the eyes, it flared into two golden horns.
"And this helmet blocks all of them."
"And the purpose of the horns?"
Cha asked. Thanos grunted.
"They are there to intimidate those who might stand in my way."
"I'm sure that will work," Cha said approvingly. "As though the mere sight of you were not intimidating enough."
Thanos feigned a chuckle.
"So Robo cannot hurt you," Cha went on. "But you still can't hurt his lordship. I've thought it through. Even if you try to sedate him so that his heart keeps beating, his health is so poor that he probably wouldn't survive the process."
"He'll sleep," Thanos promised. "Permanently. That's where Demla comes in."
"I still don't understand how..."
Thanos told him. Cha's jaw dropped, and stayed that way for a very long time. Demla had the night shift in the engine room, so he was waiting there when Thanos arrived in the morning. What passed for morning, at least. It had been only 3 hours since the ship's lights had gone out, and now the lighting savored more of a crepuscule than of dawn. But it was close enough. When Thanos entered, Demla immediately launched into a litany of everything that had gone wrong overnight, what he had done to fix it, and what could not be fixed. Thanos pretended to care, and then, when Demla was finished, took him by the elbow and guided him to a spot near the fusion reactor's intake system. The noise there made being overheard unlikely.
"I need something from you," Thanos began.
"Anything, boss,"
Demla said with great verve.
"Whatever you need."
"Boss, need,"
Bluko called out.
"You betcha."
If necessary, Thanos was prepared to threaten Demla. Unbeknownst to Cha, of course, Thanos was even prepared to kill Demla, though he hoped such a path would not need to be embarked upon. His goal was to save as many of the poor souls trapped on the Golden Berth as possible, not slaughter them in the process of rescuing them. He said nothing to Demla, merely looked significantly at his shoulder. Demla stared ahead blankly, not getting it. Eventually, though, he realized. His face fell, and he pouted.
"Oh, come on, boss. For real?"
"Boss real,"
Bluko chattered.
"Boss real."
I am afraid so,
Thanos said as gently as he could manage.
And it'll have to be right now.
Demla's shoulders slumped.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Yeah, up.
Luko started, and then stopped when Thanos' hands closed over him. Chapter 20. Wearing his helmet, Thanos strode the corridors of the Golden Birth. Behind him was Cha Raygor, who carried a bulky chill wrap and dragged a jerry-rigged floating stretcher. No one stopped them or questioned them along the way. No one would question the ship's medical officer carrying medical equipment, and no one would dare raise a finger or an eyebrow or a voice to one of his lordship's inner circle. At the door to his lordship's quarters, Thanos paused. He did not so much as look back at Cha or remind him, even with a word, of what he was to do next. Instead, Thanos simply went inside, as though this were any other day, and he were about to have the evening meal with his lordship. His lordship was already at the table. Robo and Kebi flanked him as usual. For a moment, Thanos wondered if Kebi had some sort of power as well. That, he realized, was the one potential glitch in his plan, the one thing he'd not prepared for. But he was ready. Cha was ready. Most important of all, Bluko was ready. He had to move now.
Thanos!
His lordship drew out the word, Thanos.
Thanos, what a pleasant surprise! And what an interesting choice of headgear. I never imagined you to be a helmet sort of guy. Anyway, I thought you were retuning the warp core. If we could get that back up and running, we'd be out of this raving sweep in no time flat.
I regret to inform you that the warp core will have to wait, Thanos said. I need something from you.
His lordship shrugged and tucked into his meal. Robo turned slightly toward Thanos, his brow wrinkling. Did he have powers beyond the psychic spike? Was he picking up on Thanos' intentions? Thanos licked his lips. Kebi's eyes widened just a tiny bit. She knew.
What can I do for you?
Asked his lordship, oblivious, eating. Thanos spoke the words he'd prepared and practiced.
I'm going to give you one opportunity to do what is right. I need you to step down from your position and hand authority over this ship and all aboard to me.
No one spoke. The air filled with a loud slurping sound as his lordship sucked up something that appeared to be an obese variety of spaghetti covered in an oily brown gravy. The viscous goop spattered in all directions as the noodle vanished between his lordship's lips. Sauce dotted his chin, his wattles, the tablecloth, even the arm of Kebby's tunic.
A dead man says what?
His lordship asked calmly. And Robo came around the table, eyes alight with malice. When Robo came within range, Thanos staggered, bumped against the table, slapped both hands to his head and bent over, keening.
Spike him good!
His lordship shouted, food spraying. And then, when Robo was within arm's reach, Thanos stopped pretending. He lashed out with one hand, grabbing the majordomo around the throat.
What the ever-loving hell?
His lordship cried out, his eyes alternating between red and a sickly chartreuse. Robo grabbed Thanos' wrist and tried to pry the Titan's hand away, even while grimacing and focusing his eyes on Thanos' head. Clearly, Robo was using every last bit of his psychic power and couldn't believe it wasn't working. Even with the shielding and nullifying circuitry in his helmet, Thanos felt the beginning of a headache in the back of his skull. He would have to end this quickly. He applied his other hand to Robo's throat. The majordomo made a sound like, and then his eyes rolled back in his head. Thanos kept squeezing. He'd never killed anyone with his bare hands before, and he wanted to be absolutely certain. Under the pressure of both his hands, Robo's throat collapsed. His spine crumbled. His head lolled on his shoulders, defenseless and uncontrolled like a baby's. Releasing his grip, Thanos let Robo's body drop to the floor. It made an undistinguished and generic thud. Very anticlimactic. Clearing his throat, Thanos returned his attention to the other end of the table. His lordship had scrambled behind Kebby and cowered there now, pointing and screaming,
"Kill him! Kill him! Do it now!"
Kebby stood very still. Then, with a slow movement, she pulled down her kerchief, revealing again that distorted, distended reptilian maw. As Thanos watched, she opened it wider than would have been possible on any other humanoid. That forked tongue flicked out, and behind it, he beheld something else. A longish, fleshy tube with a moist opening.
"Use your poison spray!"
his lordship howled.
"Do it now!"
Kebby spoke.
"You need him alive, don't you?"
"Are you kidding me?"
his lordship swore.
"I want him dead now!"
But she hadn't been speaking to his lordship.
"I need him alive," Thanos concurred.
With a curt nod, Kebby closed her mouth and pulled her kerchief back into place. Then, without so much as a look at her master, she stepped away from his lordship and the table and strode past Thanos and out into the corridor. It was just the two of them now. His lordship scuttled behind his chair, as though that would provide protection from Thanos' wrath. With three long strides, Thanos closed the distance between them.
"I'll give you anything you want!"
his lordship screamed.
"Anything! What do you want? I'll give it to you!"
"I want this," Thanos said,
and closed his hands around his lordship's throat. Eyes gone flat white and now bugging out, his lordship choked out words.
"Can't we talk about this?"
"Conversation is all well and good," Thanos said, remembering, grinning. "But sometimes only brute force will suffice."
"You're killing everyone on board!"
"You just let me worry about that," Thanos said,
and squeezed harder. He was careful not to kill, only to render unconscious. Just as his lordship swooned into a dead faint in his arms, Thanos heard the door slide open. Cha and Demla rushed in with the chill wrap and floating stretcher.
"Get away from him!" Cha shouted. "I don't have much time!"
Thanos did as he was told, stepping aside so Demla and Cha could wrestle his lordship's body onto the stretcher. Then they hustled him out of the dining room and vanished into the corridor. Thanos considered following them, but no. Either they would succeed, or they would not. If they did not, his presence wouldn't matter. The golden birth would explode into a billion fragments, as it so obviously wished to do, and Thanos would be flung out into the cruel vacuum of space. But if they succeeded... if they succeeded... He took his lordship's seat at the table. The food, still repellent, was at least marginally more palatable than the swill eaten by the rest of those aboard the ship. Thanos dug in, trying not to taste it. A little while later, the door slid open and Kebby entered. She sat at the opposite end of the table.
"So, are we to call you his lordship now?"
"Thanos will do, assuming we're all still alive."
"You have a plan,"
she said neutrally.
"I do. There is no guarantee it will work, but I do have one."
"And if it does work?"
she asked, leaning her elbows on the table.
"If you become master of this ship? You're still stuck with bulky engines, a nigh-useless, unmotivated crew, and a hull that will fall apart if someone belches in the wrong direction."
"I'll try to keep everyone's intestinal distress under control," he said wryly. "Tell me, why did you step aside?"
"Death was in the room no matter what. If you killed his lordship, I would die. But then again, I'll die someday anyway."
She took Thanos' goblet and drained it, managing to lift her kerchief in such a way that her mouth was still concealed.
"My parents were descendants of some of his lordship's first conscripts. Never been off the ship in their lives," she told him. "They were emotionally compatible, but not anatomically. They made me in a test tube using some old, stale gene tech."
"You are unique in the universe," he said,
and thought he detected a smile, large, cavernous, beneath the kerchief.
As are you. She saluted him with the goblet. I suspect that.
Just then, the door slid open again. Demla and Cha entered. Cha wore medical scrubs, spattered in still wet blood, and a surgical mask that covered the bottom half of his face. But nothing could conceal the glee in his eyes.
It worked,
he exclaimed. Thanos's heart surprised him by skipping a beat. Some part of him had thought that this plan would not work, no matter how well thought through. But then Demla approached him and, with something like reverence, handed him a thing. A pulsating, gelatinous bulb, roughly the size of both of Thanos's fists. The color of a bruise, with the consistency of worn rubber. It gently throbbed in his hands, reliably, lub-dubbing along.
Poor old Bluco,
Demla sniffed. By rote, everyone waited, anticipating the usual echo from Bluco. But Bluco wouldn't be responding anytime soon. In Thanos' hands, he held his lordship's heart, expertly removed from his chest by Cha's able hands, and then, before it could miss a beat, slipped into Bluco, the shift blot, who had been coaxed to take the form of a sack that would envelop the heart and keep it beating. As far as the Golden Birth's sympathy circuit was concerned, his lordship's heart was just fine. It was beating. And it would continue beating until Thanos no longer needed the ship. He grinned and held the heart aloft.
Step one, he said.
And Cha, Demla, and Kebi nodded along with him. He was still young, not yet in his physical prime, and he was master of all he surveyed. Chapter 21. What he surveyed was, in truth, not much to behold. Kebi's assessment of the ship and the crew were spot on. The announcement that his lordship was dead and that Robo's psychic spikes were no longer a threat went a long way toward assuaging the crew's fears and misgivings. They'd been under his lordship's rule for so long that they didn't know how else to live, so Thanos left their conditions, as horrendous as they were, the same. For now. He fully intended to liberate every last one of them, but right now he needed them all to keep up their tasks. It was no good to win the ship only to have it fall apart. Thanos rechristened the ship Sanctuary, just as he'd done with Exile 1. Until he returned to his rightful home, all others would merely be temporary refuges.
What now?
Kebi asked. It was a day later, and Thanos had spent that time spreading the news, answering questions, dealing with various concerns that his lordship had ignored, some of them literally for generations.
Now, Thanos told her, we see what his lordship knew that he wasn't willing to share.
Ah, the artifact.
She said it sardonically.
Do you think it doesn't exist?
She shrugged.
I'm sure the Asgardians have possession of a great many artifacts. I've heard they are long-lived, damn near immortal, worshipped as gods on some backwater planets and in the occasional shadow dimension. But an artifact that could fix a dead world?
She shook her head.
I think his lordship was mad.
Thanos chuckled.
They called me mad too, Kebi. And yet, here I am.
Yes, lord of a starbound junk heap that will collapse around your ears should you breathe too hard.
He fixed her with a gaze.
Did you speak so impertinently to his lordship?
No. But he could have had Robo drive a psychic spike through me at any moment.
Stroking the ridges that adorned his jaw, Thanos considered this.
Can I trust you?
A question that has only ever been answered one way,
she responded,
by liars and truth-sayers alike.
Then the answer is yes.
She laughed.
The answer is yes. The truth is, it depends. You don't have Robo to protect you, but your madness seems more compatible with mine than his lordship's. You can trust me as long as I can trust you, Thanos.
He nodded.
I accept that.
Together, they searched his lordship's personal quarters. It was a noisome, gag-inducing task. The quarters had not been cleaned in years, if not decades. Dust hung thick in the air, Soiled clothing, dirty linens, and rotting food intermingled into a fetid odor that defied description. It was practically its own life form, a smell that took on sentience and followed them throughout the room. Thanos envied Kebby her kerchief. They found old holotapes from Killian, various sorts of interspecies pornography, half-written edicts and treatises that inevitably rambled off into declarations of war on his lordship's long-dead enemies. They found dishes and glasses, goblets and flatware. They found chips loaded with out-of-date star charts, delineating the presence of jump gates that had been decommissioned decades ago. But on one chip, Thanos found a file tagged important and named Power. He opened it on his lordship's personal portable reader. The image on the screen, flat and two-dimensional, was difficult to manipulate and decode, but eventually he figured it out. It was a star map. The jump gate data were out of date, but the stars and systems themselves were still relevant. The end point of the map was labeled Asgard.
"Even if you could get to Asgard," Cha said.
"I can," Thanos told him.
He, Cha, and Kebby were in what had been his lordship's dining room, and now was Thanos's. The food was passable. With the death of his lordship, Thanos and his team had undertaken a survey of the ship's resources. They had discovered that the food replicators had been dialed all the way down to subsistence, a way of preserving their stores and guaranteeing longevity. Now that Thanos had already ordered the ship aimed at the Kalami Gate he'd discovered before his mutiny, they knew that soon enough they'd be back in the civilized galaxy. Within a day, they'd be at the gate, and assuming the ship survived the stresses of gate travel, they would arrive on the other side soon after. So Thanos had ordered the food quality dialed up significantly.
"Even if you could get there," Cha went on stubbornly, "and there's no guarantee of that because his lordship certainly couldn't."
"His lordship wasn't even following his own charts," Thanos said. "He was merely stumbling around the sweep."
"You're going to trust a lunatic's maps?"
Cha asked wryly.
"Just because he was insane and incompetent doesn't mean he was wrong."
Cha chuckled and shook his head.
"You'd have to fight your way through beings who think of themselves as gods to get what you're looking for. And then, even assuming you survived all of that, you'd need to get back out without being stopped, all while hauling whatever this artifact or weapon is."
"I'm surprised you're so impressed with the puissance of these gods," Thanos mocked. "Do you truly admire those who've been instilled with such violence?"
"I may dislike violence,"
Cha sniffed, scratching behind one pointed ear.
"But I understand it and respect it."
"In any event," Kebby put in, "the artifact itself is quite small, according to his lordship's notes. Smuggling it out isn't the problem. The problems are all lined up before that."
Thanos shrugged.
"If his artifact is as powerful as his lordship thought it was, if it can truly rewrite the laws of nature, then it will be well guarded. I'll need inside information."
They sat in companionable silence for a while, eating. Then Cha spoke up.
"We," he said.
Thanos paused, his fork halfway to his mouth.
"Sorry?"
"We. Just now you said, I'll need inside information. But that's wrong. We'll need inside information."
"It's my intention to set you free once we go through the gate," Thanos told him. "You owe me nothing. I am not your owner. You are not indentured to me."
"You liberated us," Cha said. "I won't turn away from that."
"You're a damned fool,"
Thanos said, pleased.
"A damned, damned fool."
"Then I suppose I am too," said Kebby. "Because I'm coming."
"No,"
Thanos said, shaking his head.
"You have no part in this. You should return to your life."
"What life?"
she asked with a short, unhappy laugh.
"I was born on this ship, and from my earliest days I knew I'd die here too. You saved me from his lordship. You gave me the chance to live a life beyond this hull. The least I can do is help you out."
"If you do, that new lease on life you're so happy about may be considerably shorter than you'd like,"
he told her. She shrugged.
At least I'll die outside.
As epitaphs went, Thanos thought, there were worse. Chapter 22. They hit the Kalami Gate with the force of a pebble tossed against the tide. Sanctuary juddered and shook. Her hull panels groaned. On deck 5 in the hydroponics arc, a panel split off, whisking 10 souls out into the kaleidoscopic blur that was gate space. Emergency doors slammed shut, eventually, and there was no further loss of life. Thanos reminded himself that those deaths were the consequence of saving so many more. His lordship had been right about something, at least. Sometimes only brutality would suffice. The ship's lights flashed and flickered all through gate space. No one knew where they'd end up. Kalami gates had been built millennia ago by the now extinct Kalami, who had come to the Milky Way and attempted to exert an imperial will over half the galaxy. They'd been routed and crushed by a combination of the Kree, the Nova Corps, and a loose alliance of other races who had put aside their own bickering just long enough to boot the interlopers back out of the galaxy. The Kalami's gate technology was fussy and imprecise, but cheap and durable. Until better, more accurate tech came along, many worlds continued to use the left-behind Kalami gates. Over the centuries, gates had been decommissioned, torn down, or just plain abandoned. This one still functioned, but there was no way to know where it would spit them out. But anything had to be better than the Raven's sweep. They emerged, according to the navigation computers, near Willett's Star, a system on the outskirts of Xandarian space. Xandar, home of the Nova Corps. Of all the societies expanding throughout the galaxy, the Xandarians were one of the most open, accepting, and trustworthy. Cheers echoed so loudly down the corridors of Sanctuary that Thanos feared the ship might split apart from the din.
How fortunate, Thanos said under his breath, scarcely believing their luck.
Then again, the Kalami had fled from the might of the Nova Corps, so it made sense that there was a gate in the sector. The Kalami had used it to escape. Thanos was escaping, too, in the opposite direction.
Fortune had nothing to do with it, Cha said somewhat smugly.
And since he did not go further and invoke a ridiculous metaphor involving flowers, merely let the whiff of it linger in the air, Thanos allowed him his moment of satisfaction. Sanctuary's command center bore all the hallmarks of his lordship's lackadaisical discipline, but it was still the central node for the ship's functions. Thanos had directed his crew to clean and repair the bridge as much as possible during their trek to the Kalami Gate, but it still reeked of phlegm and body odor, now overlaid with the sharp scent of disinfectant. By the time they had closed to within 3 AUs of Willett's Star, they were intercepted.
"Attention, unmarked vessel!"
A voice blared over the most common hailing frequency.
"This is Denarian Dakan Roe of the Nova Corps. State your affiliation."
Kebi, sitting in the second-in-command's chair, activated the ship's short-range sensors, and soon a large screen lit up with the image of a Xandarian star blaster. Thanos breathed out a sigh of relief he'd been holding since forever.
"We are Sanctuary," Thanos announced, "and we seek refuge."
"Oh, great," muttered Dakan Roe.
"More refugees."
"Your comms are still active,"
Thanos said in an overly polite timbre.
"I know,"
Roe said.
"Who or what are you fleeing from?"
"It's something of a long story," Thanos said. "Literally hundreds of years long."
"I should have taken early retirement,"
Roe grumbled.
"Why didn't I listen to my husband?"
"Comms still open,"
Thanos reproved gently.
"And I still know that," Roe shouted. "Power down your shields, I'm boarding you."
Thanos shrugged and glanced over at Kebi, who mouthed,
"What shields?"
Shortly thereafter, Dakan Roe was escorted to the bridge by Cha and Demla. The Xandarian was tall, well-fed, well-poised in a crisp, pristine Nova Corps uniform. His expression said that he was offended by everything inside Sanctuary. Thanos could hardly blame him.
"Holy hell, what in the three suns are you?"
Roe spluttered when he first laid eyes on Thanos.
"I am Thanos of Titan.
Thanos stood up from his command chair, well aware that this move made him even more intimidating. His presence purposefully filled the bridge that he commanded.
Welcome to Sanctuary.
Ro stared, his eyes bugging.
Titan? Are you sure?
Absolutely.
I have never seen anything like you in my life, and I've seen quite a bit.
We need your help, Denarian Ro.
As quickly as he could, Thanos sketched out the history of Sanctuary and its crew, with Kebi and Cha chiming in on occasion. Demla, blessedly, remained silent the whole time.
This ship is a death trap,
Ro complained.
And you've got me on it!
We've detected an outpost of yours on a planet orbiting Willett's star. If you could just direct us to a landing pad?
Thanos said with equanimity.
Then you could leave.
It's not that simple. There are forms to fill out. There's a whole bureaucracy to—
Thanos nodded once, sharply, and gestured to Demla, who approached him and handed him the pulsating glob of fleshy material that was Bluko.
Denarian Ro,
Thanos said, holding out Bluko as though offering a gift.
Right now, we all breathe on the sufferance of a shift blot's patience and attention span. Perhaps you could speed the bureaucracy along?
Ro pulled away from Bluko as though offered a meal of living maggots and dragon guts.
I'll see what I can do.
The Xandarians wouldn't let Sanctuary land on their precious outpost without thoroughly examining the ship, but they quickly put together a refugee camp outside the colony's main administrative building and began ferrying his lordship's victims down to the surface. Thanos remained on board until everyone was evacuated, then spent two more days on the ship with an annoyed Nova Corps tech named Lurian Op, figuring out how to disable the ship's sympathy circuit. It would have gone faster if not for Op's constant whining about ancient technology and caveman systems. Still, they managed to get the job done. Thanos took a solitary shuttle to the surface of the imaginatively named Nova Colony 7, where he joined the rest of Sanctuary's crew in the hastily assembled refugee camp. It was the first time the crew of Sanctuary had breathed fresh air, stood on solid ground, or felt the heat of sunlight in a long time. For some, those born on the ship who'd never been off the damn thing in their lives. It was a whole new world. Quite literally. The camp was a collection of phase tents in a flat field. In the distance, the skyline of the colony's main commercial center glowed with light and life. Thanos felt a tug toward it. Even on a basic outpost like this, Nova-controlled space was civilization. It was science and architecture. He could imagine civilized people discussing matters of import, matters of art and culture. No one would be obsessed with mere survival or keeping an old man alive long enough to figure out how to kill him. The city was the surest sign that he was once again moving in the right direction. It reminded him of home. Then again, at this point, anything that was not a spaceship would have reminded him of home. It had rained earlier in the day, so Thanos' first footsteps on a planet since being exiled sank into mud. He trudged through the slop until he found Demla, crouched under one of the tents, staring up at the sky as though he expected fire to crash down.
Water?
He croaked when he saw Thanos.
It's water. Comes down from up top.
It's called rain, Thanos told him. You'll get used to it.
Just ain't natural,
Demla complained. Thanos held out his hand.
Here.
Demla's eyes widened, and he forgot all about the impossibility of water falling from thin air, as he beheld Bluko, still throbbing and encasing his lordship's heart.
Bluko!
He cried, reaching out.
Thank you for letting us borrow him, Thanos said.
Bluko chose that moment to shapeshift, flowing into a greenish feline form as he snaked up Demla's arm to perch on his shoulder. His lordship's heart plopped into the mud.
Well, Thanos said, that's that.
He ground the heart deep into the mud with his foot. Chapter 23 The camp, he decided, was not much better than the ship. It had the benefit of atmosphere and the distant hope of the Xandarian colony, but otherwise the refugees seemed just as beleaguered and downtrodden as they had been under his lordship's rule. As Thanos walked the muddy, slushy alleys between the hastily erected tents and pavilions, he found himself thinking of the refugees as his people.
They're not,
he reminded himself.
My people are on Titan. My people are in danger.
His people. Cinta, his mother. Gwynth, who still haunted his dreams, never speaking any but the same words. With each dream, she was more and more corroded, her flesh wilting, her hair dropping out in clumps. And yet he recognized her each time, knew her anew. He had to get back. He had to save them. A fight broke out in one of the tents. Thanos heard the cry as a crowd gathered around. 15, 20, maybe more, standing in the rain, stomping their feet in the mud and cheering as two of their crewmates battered each other with clenched fists. He parted the crowd, shouldering his way through, and grabbed the two combatants by their necks, hauling them apart.
"Stop it,"
he said.
"Now."
"But he..." one began.
"I don't care,"
Thanos said.
"You have a new beginning here, a new chance. Don't launch into it with idiocy."
He shoved them away from each other. He roamed the camp. Arguments and fistfights abounded. On Sanctuary, and even on a Golden Birth, everyone had had a place, and everyone had known that place. Now the order was upended. No one knew where they belonged. Suddenly people had territory to defend, even if it was just a few square meters of somewhat dry turf under a phase tent. They had belongings now, even though they were nothing more exotic than the refugee aid kits distributed by the Xandar government. Give people who've had nothing something, anything, he realized, and they will fight to the death to protect it. The fights and squabbles were bad enough. The suicides were worse. It was an epidemic. The dead cut across all caste, species, and gender lines. Thanos found the grieving friends and families in every corner of the camp. There were as many reasons as there were deaths. The gravity was too strong. The gravity wasn't strong enough. The air tasted strange. The food wasn't processed enough. At the core, though, all the reasons came down to one. Fear. Thanos had rescued them from the only home and the only life most of them knew. Even the conscripts had become institutionalized, relying on his lordship and the familiar confines of the ship to define and constrain their reality. Let loose in the world, on a world, they were at odds with themselves. They didn't know how to be free. Standing in the rain, he reminded himself, over and over.
These are not my people. This is not my responsibility. I need to go home.
Later, after the rain passed, Dakan Ro found Thanos. It wasn't hard to locate him. He was taller than everyone else in the camp by at least a deci.
You need to register,
Ro told him, glaring down at his boots, which were caked with mud.
There are forms for you to fill out.
The bureaucracy hungers,
Thanos said.
It's ravenous,
Ro said bitterly, trying to scrape clean one boot with the heel of the other.
I can't believe they put me in charge of this camp. I should have taken early retirement.
You should have listened to your husband,
Thanos said amiably.
Damn right I should have.
He gave up the attempt with his boots and led Thanos to one of the larger tents, which served as a command center for the refugee effort. The phase tent shifted its color and level of tangibility as they entered, allowing in more light and air. Dakan Ro grumbled as he paged through a hologram generated by the tablet in his hands.
Thanos of Titan, right? Captain of the ship.
Thanos hesitated. Did he want his name recorded somewhere in a Xandarian database?
Use my birth name,
he said.
Cinta Falar.
Ro arched an eyebrow.
Thanos is, what, a nickname?
Thanos shrugged with indifference.
What else do you need? I'm in a hurry.
Ro chuckled.
Places to go? Didn't figure you'd be so eager to get back into space after limping here in that thing.
He gestured vaguely to the sky where Sanctuary sat in orbit. Empty.
Is there any news of Titan?
It had been a long, long time. It felt like eons since his exile. Thanos feared the worst. Ro paused for a moment, perplexed. News? No. Nothing I've heard, at least. Titan isn't really a big news-making sort of place. Thanos sighed in relief. If there was nothing to report, then the planet was still intact. There was still time to save what he could of his home. Now, Ro said, returning his attention to the holograms. How long have you owned the ship in question? Thanos groaned and launched into his explanation again. Ro nodded along with him, impatiently, then finally interrupted. Look, I don't care how you got the ship or who you got it from. Right now, that rust heap is taking up space in orbit. I've got the Astronomy Council complaining that it's obscuring their mega-telescope's view of Venus or some such nonsense.
How is this my problem?
Thanos asked. Ro explained. Sanctuary had been stolen so long ago that all the statutes of limitation on the crime had expired, as had the original owners. Thanos was, for all intents and purposes, the owner of the ship. It was his responsibility. So Thanos sold the ship for salvage and put the money into a smallish dart yacht, the only thing he could afford. It was fast and maneuverable, with no offensive capabilities and only a token shield unit. Still, it would have to do. He christened it Sanctuary, of course. To his surprise, before he could take off, Cha appeared at the gangplank, wearing a loose-fitting pair of pants, an open-throated shirt, and gray boots that came up to his knees. His friend had spent several nights in the refugee camp, which was a far sight more comfortable and lavish than the accommodations aboard the old Golden Berth. He was fresh-faced and relaxed.
Where are we going?
Cha asked without preamble.
I won't hold you to what you said on the ship. Are you sure you want to do this?
Thanos asked.
You could stay here and...
And what?
Cha asked.
And have a life,
Thanos proposed. Cha grinned.
You're going to save lives, Thanos. That's what I've spent my whole life doing.
Thanos grunted. He'd never told Cha exactly how he planned to save those lives. That was a debate he did not look forward to having. Still, he believed that at some point his rationality and data would overcome Cha's mysticism and pacifism. Thanos opened his mouth to respond, but another voice interrupted before he could begin.
Got room for one more?
It was Kebi, standing at the foot of the ramp that led into Sanctuary, hands on her hips. She wore a robe made of a royal blue silk and had a new red kerchief knotted across her lower face. Like Cha and Thanos himself, her neck was now bare of his lordship's collar, thanks to a Xandarian technician.
You're free, Kebi. Go and—
Settle down? Kebi asked with sarcasm. Enjoy the fruits of my labor?
Well, yes.
She laughed. It was a big booming sound that belied her small size.
I was conceived and born on the Golden Berth. I don't know how to live on a planet.
She looked around.
Honestly, can't even say I like it. Food's better, but I'm a spacer, Thanos. I live for the vacuum.
You're both mad, Thanos said. But you are welcome aboard Sanctuary.
Re-entering the star-speckled blackness of space so soon after escaping near death on his lordship's vessel put Thanos ill at ease. He wanted little to do with space travel. He wanted only to return to Titan, to save his people from their own blindness, and he would happily die in the process if that was still necessary. If. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe there was another way. Maybe the Asgardian artifact would make such sacrifice moot. Maybe he would not even need to kill half of Titan after all.
I asked around the refugee camp,
Kebi said, slipping into the co-pilot's chair,
and talked to some of the Nova Corps personnel.
She looked around the confines of the ship. Cha was muttering and clanking around in the main cabin, sorting through the dart yacht's limited medical equipment, so she raised her voice enough that he could hear too.
There is an Asgardian outpost near Alfheim in the western arm. You said we need inside information?
Thanos grinned and brought up the navigation computer. A reliable, recognizable hologram projected itself along his field of vision. He sighed with relief and joy and began plotting his course. Sanctuary had no warp engine. It was a dart yacht designed for joyrides and party cruises around local moons. But it was sturdy and could withstand gate travel. There was an artificial wormhole near Xandar that would take them to within a few light years of Alfheim. Then it would be a long, slow trek to the outpost itself. Which was good. He would need that time to formulate a plan beyond get information out of the Asgardians somehow.
Thank you, he told Kebby. You are more help than I've earned.
Well, she said hesitantly, there's a reason for that.
He put the coordinates into the ship's purpose-built intelligence. Sanctuary would pilot them to the wormhole on its own.
Oh?
He asked, and turned to her, all other words dissolving. Something in the way she gazed at him. Her eyes, so expressive and so limpid. He briefly saw a vision of Gwynth, and it rattled him in a way he'd not felt since first awakening on the Golden Berth, helpless on the shores of turbulent destiny. She locked eyes with him, then looked away.
I wasn't completely honest with you before. I have another reason for coming along. It's just that I love you, Thanos. We're both unique, both without equal. I've loved you since I met you, since you came to his lordship's dining room. Deeply. With my whole being.
Thunderstruck, Thanos could think of nothing to say. When he finally opened his mouth to tell Kebby that he had no time for such things, she burst out laughing.
I was kidding, you lilac moron. Deeply. With my whole being. You believe that nonsense?
Of course not, he said quickly.
Of course not,
she said in a dead-on mimicry of his own stentorian voice. And then she chuckled much longer than was necessary. Chapter 24 Sanctuary dropped into the wormhole near Willett's star at an angle of 46 degrees to the ecliptic. Angles were of critical importance when traveling through wormholes. You'd be spit out somewhere else in the galaxy, depending entirely on how you'd entered the wormhole in the first place. Off by a degree, and who knew where you'd end up. 46 degrees spat them out the other side, near Alfheim, where they nearly collided with a meteor. Only quick thinking and Sanctuary's built-in debris avoidance system saved them.
And the universe protects us,
Cha said brightly.
My reflexes protect us. Thanos retorted.
With the dart yacht's pokey engines, they had 2 months' travel before they would get to the Asgardian outpost. Its purpose, according to a non-updated copy of the Galactic Index preloaded into Sanctuary's computers, was to act as a way station for Asgardians who bothered to leave the shining capital of the gods and descend to the baser realms of...
Blah, blah, blah,
said Kebby, rubbing her eyes and leaning away from the hologram of the Index.
It's like a checkpoint for them. They pass through on their way to our realm, pass through on the way home after having screwed around with the mortals for their own amusement. Not many of them must come and go, given the size of this place. It's on a small moon at the edge of the solar system.
Granted, it's been a few years since I was dragooned into his lordship's service, but I can't remember the last time I heard about an Asgardian around this part of the galaxy,
Char commented.
They prefer Asgard. Drinking and partying and occasionally going off to kill frost giants and fire giants.
He raised his eyebrows significantly at Thanos.
And you're going to beard them in their den?
Frowning, Thanos rotated some of the images and text in the hologram.
Not for nothing are the Asgardians considered gods by many. In any event, brute force will not suffice in this instance.
Pity, said Kebby. Turns out you're good at it.
He grunted, remembering his hands closing around Robo's throat, his hands on his lordship.
I take neither pride nor pleasure in that. Still, artifice and guile will serve us in better stead than raw physical strength in this case. We need to sneak up on this Asgardian outpost, get inside without their knowing.
This ship doesn't have a cloaking device, Cha said. I looked while I was organizing the medical supplies, speaking of which... There aren't many. Mostly first aid and hangover remedies.
and a cryo cocoon for serious cases. They'll see us coming thousands of kilometers away, Kebby said with frustration. If there were more meteors like the one we nearly hit, we could use that as cover.
If there were more meteors, Thanos pointed out, we'd have hit one by now. No, you're right. We can't conceal our approach.
Then we're dead, Cha said matter-of-factly. Asgardians don't mess around. They tend to be hit you with a hammer and splatter your brains first, ask questions never sorts.
Thanos pondered.
If we cannot conceal ourselves, then we must use our visibility as an asset, not a liability.
How?
Kebby asked.
I'm not sure yet, he admitted. But we have sufficient time before we're in range of their sensors. We'll think of something. If I learned one thing under his lordship, it's that even though he seemed to be in complete control, with good planning, we were able to overcome insurmountable odds. We can do it again.
If it is meant to be, it will happen, Cha said solemnly.
No,
Thanos said.
As always, we will have to do the dirty work on our own.
Sanctuary hovered into sensor range of the Asgardian facility, then drifted out, then blasted back in, skewing starboard, its maneuvering rockets firing awry. At the helm, Cha Ragor slapped his hand on the broadcast controls and shouted,
Attention, attention! All ships and satellites within 2 light minutes of Alfheim! This is Sanctuary, en route from Willett Star, with a medical emergency. Repeat, a medical emergency. Please respond!
They didn't expect a response, and they didn't want one. To be sure none would be forthcoming, they kicked the engines into overdrive and blasted the ship right at the moon and the outpost. Before anyone in the outpost had time to assemble and transmit a response, they had already executed a rocky, clumsy landing outside the Asgardian edifice. It was the only structure on the moon, not hard to find. The building seemed more carved than constructed, its facade a seamless gold that glowed in the light of the distant sun. Domes perched along the roofline, connected by sleek piping. 2 enormous I-beams lined the roof and peaked over the doorway, which was etched with the image of 2 ravens flanking an 8-legged stallion. Over the frieze were the words, Hail King Odin and his wisdom, battle-birthed. Cha was already in his spacesuit. He thumb-activated the environment shield over his face and dashed down the ramp from Sanctuary onto the moon's surface, towing an anti-grav cocoon behind him. Not far from the door to the outpost, an atmospheric shield kicked in. He felt the tickle of breathable air even through his suit as he broached the perimeter of the field. The door burst open. The man who emerged had bright red hair and wore segmented steel leggings that shone with a high polish, black studded boots, and a royal blue tunic that lengthened into a skirt. Large brass buttons, almost 2 perfectly round, studded the center of the tunic, and 2 massive steely epaulets held in place a voluminous cloak made of a burnished red fabric that rippled as though in its own wind. His muscled arms were bare save for wristbands of tough hide. He held an enormous battle axe in one hand, its shaft wrapped in brown leather strips, its blade gleaming and bright. He wore his beard long and knotted.
O traveler, halt in the name of Odin.
We have a medical emergency,
Cha cried.
She's dying.
The Asgardian crossed his arms over his chest.
I am forbidden by great Odin himself to let none but the sons and daughters of the Aesir and Vanir pass.
Cha tapped a button on the cocoon. It slid open with a nearly inaudible hiss. Within, Kebby lay perfectly still. Lights flickered around her.
She developed hibernation thrush when we were in transit,
Cha said, panicked.
You have to let me use your medical facilities.
The Asgardian came closer and peered into the cocoon. The lower half of Kebby's face was exposed in all its misshapen, horrific glory.
Odin's eye, he exclaimed.
What happened to her?
We can't all be as pretty as you, Kebby said,
and let her jaw drop. The Asgardian had enough time to blink, and then Kebby's throat flexed and a toxic mist belched forth. Coughing and wheezing, the Asgardian stumbled backward, hands up. Too late, though. He'd gotten a lungful of the toxin, and it was choking him from the inside. Cha recoiled at the sight. The Asgardian dropped to his knees, clutching at his own throat. Trembling, Cha stepped aside, helpless as Thanos emerged from the ship, hands clasped behind his back.
"Excellent," he said. "It will get easier," he assured Cha.
With Kebby's help, he bound the Asgardian's wrists behind his back using stout cabling from Sanctuary's repair stores. Together, they dragged him inside. Cha lingered outside for a while, then eventually joined them, saying nothing. The Asgardian was still coughing. Tears streamed from his tightly shut eyes, running into his beard, dampening it to a blackish red. Thanos stood over him.
"I assume from the lack of hue and cry that you are the sole emissary of this outpost?"
The Asgardian spat up something red and thick.
"You're mad,"
he choked out.
"This is the royal territory of Odin of Asgard. He will—"
"Yes, yes, I know. I've been called mad before. It hasn't stopped me. I don't think it's as effective an attack as people think."
"Thanos?"
It was Cha, speaking from behind him.
"Are you sure about this?"
"Yes. Now."
Thanos crouched down before the Asgardian.
"I'm given to understand that your people fancy yourselves gods. What might you be the god of?"
"Something bloody and violent, I assume,"
Cha said. The Asgardian slitted his eyes open. They were red, raw, and weeping.
"I am Vathlas,"
he rasped, his voice like metal shavings.
"I will say no more than that."
"God of murdering helpless innocents, no doubt,"
Cha snarled.
"God of falling for subterfuge,"
Kebby suggested.
"Enough,"
Thanos barked.
"It matters not. I care only for the artifact."
Vathlas coughed. Some thin, bloody sputum dribbled down his chin. He shook his head and drew in a shuddering breath that twisted his face into an expression of great pain.
"I'd have thought his guardians to be made of sterner stuff,"
Thanos said.
"Perhaps our information acquisition will not be as difficult as we'd originally surmised."
"I'll tell you nothing,"
Vathlas swore, coughing again.
"You'll tell us everything,"
Thanos promised. He'd never tortured anyone before, but the basic concept was rather simple. Inflict pain until the subject reveals the information you seek. Torture was not actually the best tool to use for information extraction. The more intense the pain, the more likely that the subject would say anything to make it stop. Still, it was the only option they had to make the Asgardian talk. They would have to be very careful.
"We seek an artifact of great power, one that your king holds on Asgard. We need to know where he keeps such things and how to get there."
Vathlas nodded, thinking.
"You begin by stuffing your head up your own ass," he said.
Thanos grunted.
"Cha, you may want to leave the room."
"Why?"
Thanos regarded his friend with the closest thing to tenderness in his emotional repertoire.
"What I am about to do may offend your delicate sensibilities."
"Hey,"
Kebby complained.
"Why aren't you worried about my delicate sensibilities?"
"I was not aware you had any,"
Thanos said. He opened the first aid kit and selected a pair of scissors.
"I suppose we'll start with this."
He opened the tiny blades and held them up close to Vathlas's left eye.
"Unless, of course, you'd simply like to tell us what we need to know."
"Take mine eye,"
Vathlas said, holding his head erect.
"I will be honored to resemble my liege and lord Odin."
"Fine, then,"
Thanos said, and called his bluff. Hours later, Vathlas had told Thanos what he needed to know, or at least as much as he could. He was missing one eye and several teeth, along with a finger on his left hand. The finger had come off early on, and Vathlas had laughed.
"I suffered far worse during the 527th war with the Frost Giants,"
he exclaimed. Then guffawed, until Thanos shoved the finger into the empty socket where his left eye had been. Now Thanos sat on the floor across from Vathlas, who had passed out from the pain. Thanos' clothes were stained.